Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning and happy Independence Day. This is July 4th and the day that we celebrate the founding of the United States of America and the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America in Congress, July 4th, 1776. And so while I'm sure many of you are celebrating today with fireworks and barbecues and pool parties and so many other wonderful things, which all of those are really great things. And I love all of the star-spangled everything that is this holiday. What we do and what we are proud to do as Americans is celebrate the founding of our country with the unanimous declaration. Because before we the people, which are the first three words of the U.S. Constitution that was ratified to become our supreme law of the land, we had three even more important words, this unanimous declaration. And so I want to take the hour today to talk about why we can be certain that we were founded on Judeo-Christian principles and the God of the Bible, what we celebrate today, and what we need to recognize is our obligation as citizens of this great country and the inheritance of the blessings of liberty that God has provided, how we can continue to promote a moral and upright society. Yes, even in today's era where there is so much that is going on in the headlines, there's so much to be discouraged about if you look at what's going on in our society, but there is so much to be encouraged about. And ultimately, throughout church history and throughout the scope of biblical history and human history, we have always faced the challenge of a fallen world and sin and the false doctrines of the world and governments that seek to infringe upon the liberty that God himself has given to each and every human being because we are made in his image. And so governments across human history have always tried to usurp more power than God himself has actually delegated. And so where we need to start with all of this is to recognize that God himself is the supreme lawgiver. He himself has all authority in heaven and earth. And we see this in the Great Commission when Jesus says, all authority is given to me. And he, as Messiah and Savior, he is the person of God and truth. All authority is God's. And so our government does not have whatever power it wants to give to itself. And the way that government operates in various societies and times and places throughout human history and across various geography and culture has either been a legitimate form of government, recognizing the God of the Bible, the God of the universe, the only true God as the divine lawgiver and recognized divine authority, or it has in various ways been an illegitimate form of government. It has usurped authority, has provided too much power through the laws or to itself or through dictators or through, you know, many other different ways that a government can usurp unto itself. And government can, of course, be many different forms. It can be on one end of the spectrum, total anarchy and basically no civil government that protects civil society, all the way to a tyrannical, despotic dictator. And political science will teach you that government and the types of government is this spectrum from all the way on the left to all the way on the right to totalitarianism, all the way to anarchy. I like to think of it and teach it as more of this bell curve, where at the top of the bell is the sweet spot of enough government that can enforce morality and justice and do the legitimate acts of government that God has required of a civil government to promote good, restrain evil, what we see in Micah 6:8 and Romans 13 and throughout the biblical view of governments, and also to ensure protections of liberty to the people to be able to exercise our God-given freedoms. Because freedom and liberty did not start with the United States of America. We like to somehow think that as Americans, and this is part of, you know, why we're proud to be Americans, quite frankly, is that we think that we are the greatest country that has ever existed on the face of the earth. And there are a lot of actually very good arguments and justifications for that. But our system of government is not the only one or is even commanded by scripture. God does not say, you know, thou shalt establish a constitutional republic. That's not how we got to our great system of government. It's because our founders understood from human history how governments would fall off of that bell curve, either too little government on the right or too much government on the left, and they would either fail to promote good and restrain evil, or they would usurp too much power and they would infringe upon liberty and become too despotic as governments. And our founders understood that. And so when they had their delegates to the Constitutional Convention in 1787, the question was, how do we establish and ordain a government that on one hand has enough power to promote good and restrain evil, but on the other hand is restrained itself enough to not usurp the genuine freedom and liberty that each individual has from God our creator? And the fact that they framed this way, and you can go and read the transcripts from the Constitutional Convention, you can read the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers, on the arguments for and against the ratification of the U.S. Constitution in its original form before the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, of course, amended it. And then we've amended our Constitution 27 times in our nation's history. And we can do that because our founders, in their wisdom, understood they may not get everything right, or there may be future issues that we needed to address. Like, for example, a line of succession for the presidency. And so we have a 25th Amendment that provides for that line of succession for the presidency. If there is a death or disability of a president, then we have that. We also established term limits in the 22nd Amendment after FDR and how many turned the four terms, where our founders said, you know, even though George Washington was willing to say, I've served two terms, I'm going to go back to Mount Vernon and give the reins of power to someone else, which was one of the greatest acts of self-governance, I think, in world history, was being willing to not become a king in America. We have this idea of a president, but all of these different things and all the amendments and all of the ways that we have now established our U.S. Constitution, we didn't just start there. We didn't start with the founders just being these wonderful, great, you know, torch-wielding villagers that had really no concept of, you know, law, policy, or how morality functions in a civil society. And they just happened to generate one of the most brilliant civil government documents and systems ever promulgated in human history. That's just not an accurate representation of history. They were very well educated, and they understood that our entire system had to comport with the Bible, and it had to comport with man's human condition. And in fact, the Federalist Papers and James Madison would articulate this very well in Federalist 41, that until men are angels, then by necessity, we are going to have to give them enough power to promote good but restrain evil in civil government, but we're also going to have to limit that power enough so that we don't get to total despotism. So all of these arguments were ongoing in the midst of our Constitutional Convention creating the U.S. Constitution, but that didn't happen until September of 1787. So let's go back a few years prior, almost a decade, to in Congress July 4th, 1776. So when people ask you, and they ask me quite frequently, well, how do we know that America is founded on a Christian worldview? Because the Constitution doesn't even mention God. So this is clearly a secular document. We, the people, are the sovereign of this country. We can do whatever in our arbitrary human worldview we determine in terms of the separation of powers and what powers go to which branch. And we can basically do whatever we want because we can reinvent society according to our will. And this is just a social contract. We've all heard that before, right? This social contract theory that we, the people, get to manufacture our reality as we prefer it. Well, they're missing what July 4th, 1776 was all about and what we're celebrating today. They're missing that before we the people was ever contemplated in 1787, three more important words, this unanimous declaration, the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America. This was, I like to call it the great complaint, because this set out, and it goes on to say to prove this, the reason that the United States needed to separate from England and throw off the government that was infringing on liberty. They said, to prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. So this was basically the in the courtroom of the world, the 13 United States of America said, here is our worldview. Here is our view of government. Here is our view of liberty. Here is our view of our pre-political rights that God endowed us with. They give us the worldview statement that America was founded upon. And so if anyone asks you, well, where is God in the Constitution? Direct them back to the Declaration, because the Declaration is the worldview statement. It's the mandate to our country that ultimately initially led to the Articles of Confederation, which governed America in this kind of interim between, you know, the end of the Revolutionary War until the Constitutional Convention in 1787. And that was somewhat good, but they recognized, our founders recognized, that it didn't give enough power to government in order to actually have a full union. We didn't want to be, for example, like the European Union, that there's so much sovereignty in each of, it's a very loose union and the type of union that really doesn't actually provide a lot of security to each of the sovereign states. They didn't want the states to basically be their own individual countries. They wanted a United States of America. And so this idea of federalism. So when the Articles of Confederation were not working, the delegates from the states were mandated and they were authorized by their state legislatures to and they were delegated to the Constitutional Convention. So it was an actual authority and correct power. So this wasn't a runaway convention at its inception. The U.S. Constitution, you'll hear some of these arguments that suggest that that the U.S. Constitution was actually an overthrowing of the government of the Articles of Confederation. That's all historical nonsense. Because each of these delegates to the Constitutional Convention was vested with authority from their state to go and to argue and to debate, how do we actually create a system of government that will, on one hand, provide enough power to promote good and restrain evil, but on the other hand, not have too much power that we end up with a system that we've just rejected. So they all, though, came to the table understanding what the unanimous declaration provided for, what the mission was. And if you ever have a system like my dad is literally a rocket scientist, like he helps build satellites and do missions in space. And the system that they build has to function to achieve their target and their goal. And so you design a vehicle that will go to the destination that you prefer. And that's what they were debating. And they all agreed unanimously on what that mission was. So we're going to talk more about that mission, get into the declaration itself when we come back. And we are celebrating today, July 4th, Independence Day of 1776, which is one of the best American holidays, and talking about why I am so proud to be an American and why we need to continue to preserve and protect the blessings of liberty. We'll be right back with more.
Speaking truth with love. This is Jenna Ellis in the morning.
Welcome back, and we are celebrating Independence Day, July 4th, 1776, and talking about why the Declaration of Independence actually gives us the worldview statement that our founders unanimously agreed. And think about how amazing this is. I mean, can we even get Congress to unanimously agree on anything anymore? I mean, they probably couldn't even agree that, you know, today is July 4th, right? Even though that's self-evident truth, as our founders would have recognized. I mean, they can't agree on reality. They can't even agree now on the definition of what a woman is, right? So Congress can't agree on anything. But back when there was still a little bit of civility and rationality in the world, the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America was promulgated to a watching world. And this is what I like to call the great complaint that set out why our founder said it is necessary to abolish our current form of government and to institute a new government that will not usurp liberty, but rather protect it. And they understood that God himself is the divine lawgiver, that he provides limited power to government, whatever that government looks like, in order to achieve a certain end. And that goal of government is to promote good, restrain evil, to protect the liberties and freedom given to every human being made in God's image, and to ensure that there are protections in a moral and upright civil society. So in Congress, July 4th, 1776, the declaration starts out this way. The unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America, when in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to separation. So let's break down that first paragraph for a moment. So they are saying, in the course of human events, as we are continuing on in world history, as time continues and ticks on, it becomes necessary for a people. And we know that God established nations back all the way back in Genesis. God established nations. This was part of the original covenant between God and Abraham, part of the Abrahamic covenant, to give the land in Israel to a certain people, to Abraham and his descendants through Isaac, who was the child of promise. And that established the nation of Israel. And that is an example of a one people. So people are connected through geography, through political boundaries, through land boundaries, and also through, in some senses, ideas. And so in America here, we're called, you know, the great melting pot, and we have, you know, diversity is our strength, as the left says it. And I don't believe that at all, because our unanimous declaration is actually our strength. Unanimity on one understanding and worldview of government is our strength. It's not diversity of my truth versus your truth and what I think about government, what you think, and what I think should be permissible and what you think. No, it's unanimous to understand the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle us. So what does that mean? Who is entitled to a separate and equal station? And we're not talking about equality here in that sense. We're talking about, you know, in how the left says it, we're talking about being equal in terms of inheritance of the laws of nature and nature's God that entitle us. So this is all talking about pre-political rights. And what the founders understood are the blessings of liberty that well before our system of government was invented, well before any political boundaries that can, of course, change. If you've ever studied world history, you know that political boundaries often change. I mean, people can immigrate to different countries. They can leave a certain people group or a nation. They can become citizens of another nation according to different laws, customs, traditions. All of those things happen. But before any of that, and as all of those things continue to shift and change throughout world history, each people group or one people, each nation is separate and equal in this sense, and the founders rightly understood that we are still bound by the laws of nature. It doesn't matter whether you live right now in the United Kingdom, whether you know you are over serving this country in a different country, whether you live now in this particular time and age in human history, or whether you lived 1,000 or 2,000 years ago. The laws of nature have not changed. We know that from the Bible because God himself says, I'm the same yesterday, today, and forever. He has created this world in the reality to which we are presented, and we have no control over certain immutable characteristics of our reality and also of ourselves. We can't change the fact that we are human beings. We can't change the fact of when we were born. I was born in 1984. I can't change that. I was born a woman. And no, that's not just the gender I was assigned at birth that now I can discover later in life. No, that is an immutable characteristic because the laws of nature are such that God himself ordained it that way. It is God's sovereignty. And so what the founders are saying is that the laws of nature and nature's God, who the God of the Bible, this is the first reference right in this first paragraph, that we are bound by the divine commands and the authority of God himself and how God's authority structure exists in our universe. We can't change that, but that also entitles us to certain things, a separate and equal station, and to dissolve political bands which have connected us to each other. We have the right through God to dissolve political bands, to change our structure of government, and the right of revolution and the right of legitimate authority through God himself. And I'm not talking about illegitimate rebellion. That's a very important distinction. It's not just saying, I don't like our government. I don't like this authority system. Like, you may not like your church's authority structure because it's telling you, sorry, you can't live with your girlfriend, or sorry, you can't continue to live in the sin of homosexuality. Or you may not like that if you are a child still at home listening to this program, you may not like that your parents have authority over you, or you may disagree with some of those rules. You should have a system to appeal that, and parents should be enforcing legitimate justice in the home. All of those things are true. But God gave that authority to parents to establish justice and to promote good and restrain evil in their own home. That is the family government system. The church government is the same way, to exercise church discipline, to have authority over the members of the church in the ways that God has provided in church government. And in the same way, the laws of nature and nature's God entitles a political civil government to have certain authority, but not other authority. There is legitimate and illegitimate authority that a government can exercise. And so when there is illegitimate authority exercised, then nature's God entitles a people to dissolve those political bands. Just like if in the family government there is abuse in the home, there are sufficient biblical reasons to dissolve the marital bonds that have connected them. That is and of course, you know, God hates divorce, but he allows that in situations that are necessary, where there is an illegitimate family government system going on. So this is, in the same way, this is basically a type of national divorce that the founders understood they needed to justify, because there is illegitimate rebellion if a husband and wife are not submitting one to another, as Ephesians talks about and as God talks about for the design of the family. There can be illegitimate rebellion. There can be illegitimate divorce, but there can be biblical divorce. And in the same way, the justification for that needs to be articulated. And so the declaration of the 13 United States of America says, as we are continuing down the road of history, it becomes necessary for this one people who are entitled to all of the rights and dignity that God himself provides to every individual human being, when they dissolve the political bands which have connected them, then they say a decent respect to the opinions of mankind. Like, we understand that people will have questions. It requires they should declare the causes which impel them to separation. And then here is the beautiful worldview statement. They say they don't just go on to start saying all of the facts and all of their complaints about the government. They say this instead, and you'll know this very well. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And they go on to say that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from consent of the governed. But let's break this down a little bit. So remember, these are the same people that nature's God entitles them to dissolve political bands when it becomes necessary. And then they say, we hold these truths to be self-evident. And self-evident truth is just as much as it is a self-evident truth that today is July 4th, and that in the realm of a courtroom, attorneys could ask the judge to do something called take judicial notice. I don't have to prove that today is July 4th. I can simply say that is a self-evident, self-proving fact. So they, our founders, recognize that certain truth is self-evident. C.S. Lewis, in his book Mere Christianity, would call this discoverable truth. We didn't get together in a legislature and determine a 24-hour day, or that the sun would rise in the east, or that the seasons would occur, or that gravity is part of the universe to which we are presented. We discovered those truths. We discovered how they operate in the sovereignty that God has created. And then we learned how to negotiate with them and work within it. We can still fly airplanes in spite of the law of gravity. Why? Not because we got in a legislature and we repealed gravity and said that we think that we have the ability to do that, but rather we're negotiating within the confines of the self-evident truth of the reality to which we are presented. And we can still then negotiate with our reality and live in a society and a universe that is structured by God himself. There are certain things that we just don't have the authority to do as human beings, but we can negotiate within that. So truth is self-evident as much as sex and gender is actually self-evident. We can't reinvent that reality. We can't reinvent the reality of age or of so many other immutable characteristics of ourselves and the world around us. Our founders understood that truth is self-evident. And one of those self-evident truths is that all men, all human beings made in God's image, are created equal. We are co-inheritors of the kingdom, as the Bible says. We are endowed by our creator. This is, again, a reference to the God of the Bible, with certain unalienable rights. And that term, I love that term, unalienable. That's one of Thomas Jefferson's fingerprints on the Declaration of Independence. He was one of five lawyers that in the Declaration Committee drafted the Declaration of Independence. And that term unalienable actually refers to property rights. Jefferson was very concerned about property rights. And you know, if you know anything, if you watch Downton Abbey, for example, and you know the whole fee tale inheritance and how the land had to go with the title of how you were born, and you had this inheritance and the land had to run with whoever is the next inheritor. He was all about free alienability of property, the right to buy and sell, and that real property and also other forms of property in our possession could be freely alienated and negotiated in a considered exchange. And that led to a lot of our property law that are the principles that we've established in our country. And so that ability to freely alienate ourselves with our own property to buy, sell, exchange, all of that led to this term, unalienable. So our founders are saying, unlike certain property that we can, at our own will, alienate from us, we can buy or sell it, our rights are endowed by our creator that are so intrinsic to our humanity, they are unable to be alienated from us. We cannot buy, sell at our whim. The government can't abridge or infringe upon them at whim. They are so intrinsic. So we're endowed by our creator with certain unalienable rights. They can never be alienated from us. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And pursuit of happiness is kind of this term of self-governance, of being able to direct our lives according to the will of God to us personally. We don't live in a society, for example, that tells us or commands us what our job has to be, our vocation, where we have to live, a lot of those other things, how many kids we have to have. So many things that are part and parcel to understanding and living the will of God in our own lives. So life, liberty, and liberty here is a term that doesn't just mean the freedom to do whatever we want, but the liberty to do what we ought. So it is ordered liberty. So truth is self-evident. Every human being, all men are created equal. They're endowed by God himself with rights that are not able to be alienated from us. These include, but are not limited to, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. And then they go on to that to secure these rights in order to make sure that we can exercise our genuine freedoms. Governments are instituted among men. That's after the fact, right? Our rights are pre-political. They don't come from government. So when people are telling you, well, you know, our First Amendment, you know, gives us the right to freedom of speech, the right to free exercise of religion. No, the First Amendment isn't granting you anything. The First Amendment is a restraint on government power. And we're going to get into this in the next segment because we have to take a break here. But we have to understand that our rights come before any design or system of government. I mean, this was almost a decade that our founders are declaring this before our U.S. Constitution was even contemplated, much less ratified. And they understood that before governments are instituted, truth was self-evident. Men were created equal, endowed by God with unalienable rights. And that only after that, to secure those rights, governments are instituted among men and ordained. The nations and governments are ordained by God himself. And we see that clearly from scripture. So as we are celebrating July 4th, going through this wonderful declaration that provides so much liberty, we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Speaking truth with love. This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back and happy Independence Day, July 4th. We are celebrating this unanimous declaration and going through the text of the Declaration of Independence and how we can know for certain that we are established as a country on the Judeo-Christian worldview. And why is that? Well, as we have been talking about over the last two segments, the text itself says that truth is self-evident. Our founders unanimously understood and recognized that. They didn't create it. They didn't invent it. They didn't get together and just say, we're going to legislate that. They recognize that truth itself is objective. It's self-evident. It is self-defining that God, in the reality to which we are presented, provides the laws of nature and his own divine authority. We just discover it and how the laws of God operate in our universe, the laws of nature and of nature's God, and that we are endowed by that very same God of the Bible with certain unalienable rights, and that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. They derive their just powers. Notice it's just or legitimate justice. The correct and rightful authority, not just any power that the government wants to attain to itself, deriving just powers from consent of the governed. This was a novel concept that the very same people who God endowed with certain unalienable rights had to consent to the powers of government instead of being at the mercy and the whim of a tyrant or even of a political system that the founders of our country were separating from in England, which was, of course, you know, the king and parliament at the time. Deriving their just powers from consent of the governed. And they were removing their consent to be governed by England with this declaration. They go on to say that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, what preserving our liberties, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people, those very same people that are endowed by God with certain unalienable rights, to alter or abolish it, that form of government, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. So they're recognizing here that we can organize the powers of government, which are, you know, legislative, executive, and judicial, which had been historically, especially if you've seen throughout the Middle Ages and the kings and the wars and all those, had been vested in just one person, a tyrant. He could legislate, could create law, he could execute it, enforce it, and then he was the judicial branch and he could command the punishment. And we've seen that all the way back into biblical history with Babylon and then the Medo-Persian Empire that that led to the historical event of Daniel in the lion's den, when King Darius would say, or Darius, if you want to pronounce it that way, when he issued an edict and he just said, you know, here's my law. And then he had to enforce it. And then he had to issue punishment all by himself. There was no separate legislature, and he wasn't restrained by an executive. And there was no judiciary that was separate and unbiased. And so this is where the founders are saying, we can institute and organize our powers in such a form as to them, who the same people that God entitles to dissolve political bans, as to seem most likely to affect safety and happiness. Now, happiness here isn't this trivial, fleeting joy. It's saying happiness in the sense of pursuit of happiness, living a life that is God ordained, and living our lives according to self-government and to our best interest, to be able to determine for ourselves and for our family what is in our best interest. This gives rise to the whole idea of parental rights, right? And the whole idea of self-governance and liberty, to say that if I am pursuing happiness for myself and my family, I get to direct the health, safety, and well-being and direction of my children, raise them up and train them up in the way they should go. And I am entitled to that as someone who God endows and our creator with that unalienable right, because children are given to their parents, not to a government system. So all of this works together. And I just love the language of the Declaration. It's so wonderful. And it's so beautiful. So they go on to say, prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. So I mean, we all have concerns with our government, right? We all don't like certain things that the government says that, you know, is permissive or prohibited. We may not like the speed limit in our town, you know, some of those things, but those are light and transient causes. And so they're saying it's prudent that governments that have been long established won't be changed just for those sort of light and transient temporary things. And accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they're accustomed. So saying most of the time, people just kind of suffer under their government instead of doing what we're doing today, which is declaring that this isn't a light and transient cause, that evils can be resolved. And so they say, but when the long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them to absolute despotism. In other words, whenever the government has so, for such a long time, abused their authority, and we are basically reduced to absolute despotism, it is our right, it is our duty to throw off such a government and to provide new guards for future security. And such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. They are arguing for why they are separating, why this is a legitimate revolution. This is not an illegitimate rebellion. Because Romans 13 says, right, to submit to government. But that's only submitting, and submission in the entire context of the Bible is only submission to legitimate authority. We submit to God's authority because it's legitimate. We only submit to the authority of the church, the family, and the civil government when it is legitimate. And yeah, can there be these minor light and transient abuses? Of course. I mean, is your family system perfect? No. But you only submit to legitimate authority. If your government is telling you, like it did during COVID, that you have to shut down your church, God says, meet together in church. He says to have church and to not forsake the gathering of yourselves in the assembly. And so that was a contrast where the government was actually abusing its authority under our constitutional structure. Thankfully, we have our constitution. But the government at that point was telling Christians and telling church leadership, you have to reject the command of God. And we obey the legitimate command of God over the whims of man. That was an illegitimate mandate from government. So of course we don't submit to that, right? And we've learned that hopefully through COVID. So they're explaining here why such is now the necessity which constrains them, the people who are leaving, to alter their former system of government. So then they go on to actually say what was going on at the time in 1776. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object to the establishment of absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. And they go on for nearly 30 or around 30 different complaints of these usurpations. So they're saying here is everything that we are proving to why we cannot possibly submit to this government anymore. So for example, he's abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection, waging war against us. They didn't resolve that. He had for imposing taxes on us without our consent, for depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury. They understood due process as a requirement in order to foreclose any of the blessings of liberty and our unalienable rights. You have to go through due process. The government can't foreclose any of your rights without due process. So all of these other things, he has excited domestic insurrections amongst us. He's endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers and the rules of warfare and undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. I mean, all of these things. He's plundered our seas, ravaged our coast, burnt our town, destroyed the lives of our people. I mean, could you imagine if the Biden administration was doing that, or any administration the Obama administration had been doing that? Burning towns, destroying lives of the people, then we would say, yeah, that's an illegitimate government. And there are a lot of ways that we're suggesting our current government is illegitimate, and we need to figure that out. And thankfully, our Constitution provides ways that we can alter our form of government without having to abolish it. And we need to pursue those changes, certainly. But they go on then to say, after listing all of these grievances, in every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. We have asked for this government to stop doing all of these evil things. We've petitioned our government. They didn't just immediately say, hey, we're done with this and who cares and we are going to revolt. They said at every stage, we've petitioned for redress. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Nor have we been wanting in attentions to our British brethren. We've warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over us. We've reminded them, we've continued to appeal to them. And so they say they too have been deaf to the voice of justice. We must therefore acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation and hold them as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends. So they're saying all of these things, all of these usurpations, we are now justified. And they say, we therefore, because of all of the foregoing, the representatives of the United States of America and General Congress assembled. And what did they say? Appealing to our vote and to the social contract, which allows us to redefine our existence and our reality. No, they knew who has the ultimate authority. And I love this part of the declaration. They said, we therefore, the representatives of the United States of America in General Congress assembled, appealing to the supreme judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions. They named God again. They call him the supreme judge of the universe. And we know that from the Bible as well, that God is the ultimate judge. God is the ultimate and divine lawgiver. He is the ultimate source of authority. We only exercise specific limited powers that God has given in the family government, the church government, and the civil government. But it's God himself who holds all authority, appealing to the supreme judge of the world. They didn't have the structure of appeals that we do here in our current system. But they petitioned, but they said now, when that has been fallen on deaf ears, our ultimate court of last resort is the supreme judge of the world. So appealing to the supreme judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and by the authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states, and they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and all political connection between them and the great state of Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that the free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and do all the other acts and things which independent states may of right do. And then they said, for support of this declaration with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, because they knew that they were appealing to God himself, the protection of his providence, his sovereignty. They said, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. And that is one of the greatest documents in all of world history, because they laid it out so beautifully that we have, as a free and independent people, as one people, and each human being, we are endowed by God, our creator, with pre-political rights. And they appealed specifically to the laws of nature and of nature's God. And so it doesn't matter that God himself is not mentioned in the Constitution, because that's just the nuts and bolts of how our founders ultimately created a system that would fulfill this mandate. And when they said that, as to them, shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness, organizing our powers in such a form that we can actually enact our powers of government. Our Constitution and our entire supreme law in America is predicated on this mandate that our rights come from God, our creator. So nothing, no interpretation of our U.S. Constitution can contravene that God himself, or go against, that God himself gives us our rights as human beings made in his image. We are absolutely founded on the Judeo-Christian God of the Bible, his principles, his authority. Our founders unanimously appealed to the supreme judge of the universe. That's what we celebrate today on July 4th. And I'm really proud to be an American. And I hope that our country will still persist. And I hope that this has helped you to understand why we need to stand up firmly for the truth, rely on the Lord, because this is a wonderful blessing of liberty. And I'm brought to tears by recognizing how wonderful of a society we actually have, but we need to ensure that we understand this so that when it comes to our U.S. Constitution, we are not arguing on a secular humanist playing field. We're not ceding this to be a social contract here. We're not saying we the people are the sovereign. God is the sovereign. So today on July 4th, celebrate that and recognize that he is still the King of Kings and Lord of Lords overall. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna at AFR.net.